Welcome to the Conversations Podcast. I am excited about today's conversation. We have lead pastor Jose Abaroa with us. Jose, welcome back
to the podcast. Taylor.
And we're joined by one of our amazing community group leaders. He is a legend. His name is Ken Strange. Ken, welcome to the podcast.
Well, good morning, everyone.
It's great to have y'all both. We usually start, Jose, by kind of just sharing your thoughts on what God taught you leading up to the message. And then, Ken, I'm so excited to have you here just to pick your brain about not only the message, but just the overall concepts and themes of leadership and delegation, compassion, care. Who better to talk to than you? So I'm excited.
I'm excited about that too, Taylor. And this is one of those verses, scriptures, parts of the gospel where Jesus lays out his strategy. And it's quite an interesting one because he's preparing the disciples for what's to come. He's going to ascend into heaven later on and the Holy Spirit will descend and then these guys will be in charge. Jesus will no longer be with them in the flesh. He will be with them in spirit. And so he gives a bit of a preview here in Matthew 9 and 10 to the fact that he's going to delegate his authority on the disciples and they will now be the ones that will carry the message forward. And again, it's quite an interesting strategy that the creator of heaven and earth delegates his authority to people like us, like the disciples who then become apostles.
It's humbling and inspiring. Ken, we'd love to hear your thoughts on just that concept in general, just that God could have, I mean, Jose, you shared it on Sunday. God could have just wrapped it all up. He could have finished everything and said the end, but instead he chose to use people like us to be continuing part of his plan.
And I think one of my favorite parts of that whole thing is he names the people that will move forward, but they failed a lot of times, and yet they were still able to carry the message. Mm-hmm. They didn't get it right every time, and they learned as they went, just like, you know, kind of, I have to relate that in my life, is like, you know, it takes a long time to become a decent leader and to learn how to delegate, so.
Failure is the best teacher.
Yes, it is.
So when you fail and you make mistakes, then you can really grow from it. It teaches us, first of all, humility. So it's not about us, and yet God uses us in spite of our failures. Mm-hmm. So I think that they're a great example. To your point, Ken, that's a great observation that their resumes don't look too good.
Right.
I don't know if they're going to get many modern-day jobs with resumes like the ones that are in the scriptures. So
I agree.
Yeah, no, and just this idea, Jose, you had a phrase, embracing the authority and keeping up the passion. Some people, that word authority, like whether they're a teenager or even later on in life, that may be like just a cringy word, like, oh, that may, they have maybe so many connotations with the word authority. But something, Jose, that you challenged us with is reminding where our authority came from, that's what the disciples, they recognized it wasn't on their own strength. So what is the significance just for us to both embrace the authority God's given us, not to neglect that or ignore it, but also recognizing the power of where it came from.
Yeah, I think it really has to start with humility, recognizing that it's not in us. It's from the Lord. It's for our good and for the good of the people around us, but it doesn't start here. It starts with the Lord. And then it is a thing that grows over time. So the more you're in a leadership position, for example, the more it takes used to. I'm so glad that I've had 5 years in this position, and I'm so glad that I look back and I'm not where I was in year one. I've grown along the way, but a lot of those growing pains included a lot of failure, a lot of things that I now know better, but I didn't know then. God's grace was with me all along the way.
Yeah. Well, this reminded me when you first started talking, one of the big lessons I had to learn is I put shift supervisors on, and I thought I was doing the greatest thing in the world, but I kept stealing the authority back from them. Like they would try to do something and I would go in and correct it in front of the crews or, you know, just completely take their authority away. So after a while, people said, well, I don't want to be a shift supervisor because you give me the position without the authority. And it's something I really had to sit back and listen, like, well, what does that mean? You know? So now I've learned that when I give you a duty to do, I need to give you the authority to do it as well, because then it makes it a much more powerful position for you to be in, and it furthers the concept of running a business. So.
Ken won't tell you this because he's super humble, but he wears many hats in the community, including the director of Wimberley EMS. So if people are wondering what shifts coordinators are you talking about? So that is an important role. Ken, what about this concept of recognizing that your authority comes from God? Is that something that you learned early on in life? Is that something that God's kind of been teaching you kind of in the latter years? But how has that kind of resonated with you?
Well, I think I picked that concept up pretty early because I had zero self-confidence, and I had to rely, you know, on God's power to help me get through this stuff, and just lots of praying, lots of laying awake at night saying, God, I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to have to depend on you to help me get through this situation because it's way bigger than I am.
Go ahead. Would y'all say there's warning signs as far as when maybe you're drifting into this mindset that you deserve the authority or you deserve to be in the shoes you're in, or you start to kind of be that kind of domineering leader? Are there certain things you notice in yourself or maybe in your conversations that kind of may realize, oh, I need to kind of recognize or humble myself and come back to the true position I have?
Well, you don't have to humble yourself because you will be humbled quickly when you start believing that.
That's so good.
You will 100% you will be humbled by someone or God or a situation's going to come up and you think you're all of that. And all of a sudden you're like, I have no idea where to go from here. So I've been humbled many, many, many times in my life. So.
I think it's a big deal, Ken, in that example that you gave, that your shift advisors were willing to tell you, I don't want to, or other people, hey, you're treating them this way. So that you created a safe environment where their voice could be heard. Yeah. Oftentimes when we think that as the leader in any capacity, we're dictating too strongly, we're strong arming, we're not remembering that our power comes from the Lord. And this can be active in our parenting. It doesn't need to be solely in the workplace. It can be in any sort of leadership position. If we are trying to make ourselves the boss or the man or the woman, in that case, then, people will not want to be around us.
That's exactly right.
And a lot of times silence and distance will be created. And that's the sad part, is that you may find yourself in a very lonely place. The good news is that we believe in repentance. So you can always turn back to God. And in order to repent, that requires humility. So there's always a way to go back to that. And I will say, I'm convicted, Ken, by that example, because I can think of many times where I delegate authority. And then I still, even when I have the best intention, I want to help out.
Yes.
But I say too much.
Right.
You know, I say too much, and instead of inspire, I crush.
Yes.
And that's the difference, is when you inspire, you impute belief and confidence in that person. But when you overstep, you crush that person.
Yes.
And then they're not excited about what they're doing.
Right. And that's exactly what I was doing. It's like I would say, you're the ship supervisor. And then when somebody would do something wrong, they would do whatever their correction was. And I would go in and redo and undo that. And then they were like, well, why am I even here? And so it was a big lesson I had to learn, is to say, okay, you have the authority to do this, and I'm going to go with that. And if I didn't agree with what they did, then we had that conversation privately between the two of us.
That's good.
After that. Yeah. So
Well, let's talk a little bit more about authority, Jose. I loved how you're expanding that. It can mean the workplace. It can mean the leader of leaders, but it also can mean in your home. There's different authorities that God has given all of us just as believers in Christ. So I'd love for you to speak to that and just kind of the significance of that. Because some people listening, they're like, that's great, but I'm not a leader of leaders, or I'm not. And so yet God still has delegated authority to us.
Yeah, I think about the scripture speaking to fathers specifically. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Mm-hmm. It's the same principle. Inspire them. Discipline them. Don't let them run the house, but make sure that you're not exasperating them, crushing their spirit. And it's not easy. It's a hard thing, but it really speaks to, in our innermost being, do we recognize that God's the one that put us in the position that we're in? And he also teaches us how to submit to authority. That's important, and that takes a lot of humility. So if you're not in a leadership position, and if you're serving, like the disciples were, I mean, they were serving Jesus, they did obey.
Yes.
They didn't push back. They didn't fight back. They did obey. And in Luke's gospel, we see that 72 were also sent out, not just 12. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, obedience to the person in authority plays into this idea, which, again, I think really all points to humility. Are we willing to lead humbly? Are we also willing to serve humbly? And I know this, that if we're willing to serve humbly, God can use us to lead humbly. So leading really starts with following and serving first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, God has really kind of instilled in me in the early ages of becoming, you know, a leader and then into fatherhood is I'm more of a servant leader. I mean, my job as the leader is to make your job better and easier. And so I've kind of tried to live by that and see what that looks like. So.
Yeah.
Good. That's good. Jose, one of the questions that you had in your message, kind of starting out, we look at in Matthew 9, all these healing stories just of Jesus on the move. He's healing people. And the question you asked is, how have you seen the passion and power of God active in your life? And so I'd love to hear that answer for y'all personally, but also just starting with the significance of that question. What is that question kind of drawing out just even for us to stop and recognize?
Yeah. So with this conversation that we're having, we already moved ahead in some ways to delegating authority. And so this is just moving us back to recognizing that the ultimate authority comes from God. He's the power source. Mm-hmm. We can plug into him and see his passion and his care in our life, in every season, in every situation. And so the question really is, what does that look like? Do we have eyes to see what God's doing in our life?
Yeah. Ken, what would your thoughts be on that as far as just recognizing the ways that God is working in you and active in you?
Yes. Well, God is really moving in my life and always has, even in the depths of my alcoholism, I recognize that God took care of me, you know, and that my authority and my, I think everything I do is blessed by God to do that. And I just really try to appreciate that and, you know, recognize that in my life on a daily basis, because sometimes I do get big and like, look at what I've done and all the great things I've done. And then it's really have to remember, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do any of that without God in my life and his caring over me and, you know, just pouring into me.
So. Yeah. Not everybody has a day that the local city council designates your day. So one of the...
Ken Strange Day.
Ken Strange Day. Yeah. One of the fun things about this is that when we really see God as the power source and we live into that, then other people get to call out, you know, the compliments and who we are. So Ken, anyway, I'm just so grateful that you've lived the way that you have lived, because I have received so much blessing wise, but just impact in the community, the way that you have led in such a servant hearted way has really changed so much in our community. So grateful for your example. And I hope to one day maybe have half a day or something. Like I'll take an hour,
Jose, of hour.
Day or something. Like, yeah, give me an hour. start the clock. But I do want to add something to your answer, Taylor, and then I want to shoot it back to you. Power and care of Jesus. When I realized that my identity was not about what I can do, but who I was in Jesus and what he had done for me, that was the biggest shift for me in my faith. When I separated me as a doer, as a potential leader, you know, especially in my college years where I wanted significance, I wanted success. And when I peeled all that back and realized I don't need to do any of that to be his son and for him to love me and to care for me. That's when my life did a 360. And every day is living to remember that and then living in light of that.
Yeah, no, that's very true for me too. Just growing up very much into people pleasing. And it wasn't until college that I recognized that. I wrote about it, a little tease, wrote it in the devotional books for the resurrection stories. But yeah, it's just that idea. For me, the passage came from just the idea of being chosen by God. And even just thinking of Jesus' baptism and how God says, this is my son who I'm well pleased, before Jesus had done anything. So we're reading now Matthew 9, all these miracles, all these stories. But like before he did any of that, God was like, I'm well pleased. And that, yeah, I believe that. I trust that about me, but it's just so hard to really grasp my mind around that.
It really is hard to believe that, you know, that he loves us. He just loves us. He just does.
Mm-hmm.
And
What about someone on the other end of the spectrum? We've talked about kind of trying to keep our ego in check and kind of stay humble, but what about someone that's listening that may be thinking, there's no way that God would use me. There's no way that he would choose me. You don't know what I've done. You don't know what I've been through. And so God may have picked the 12 or 72 at one point, but there's no way that he would pick me.
Well, that's been me all my life. It's like, you know, I'm just not worthy. I'm not smart. I didn't go to college. I don't know these things. And God just blesses that every day, you know? And so I hope people will realize that God truly does equip you when it's time to do what he needs for us to do. So,
yeah. Jose, what would you add?
I want to ask, Ken, how have you handled that on a day-to-day when those doubts creep in? How do you snap out of that self-deprecation and into the assignment that's before you? Because you say that, and yet you've been incredibly successful in the way that you've handled the things that God's given to you. And so I do think there is I'd love to learn how you go from one place to the other.
Well, I think you just have to get up and go. You know, there are those nights where I lay in bed and I just pray for the sun to come up. Once the sun comes up and I start moving and I get out of who I am and start helping other people or going to work or doing just the next thing, then, you know, and just praying through that of God, please give me the strength to do this. Even though I don't feel worthy at all, you know, God still pushes through that. And I have to think back when Joseph was put in prison, you know, I mean, he could have given up and he could have just wallowed in that and he didn't. And he just did the next thing in front of him. And, you know, and then that's kind of how I have to live my life. Even when I don't want to, even when I'm scared to death, I just try to get up and do the next thing in front of me and not do 50 things down the line. But what's the very next thing I need to do? I need to get up, take a shower and go to work.
And
then all that fear that I have of going to work, somehow it dissipates and I just jump into the next thing and, you know, hope I'm doing it correctly. So,
yeah, that's really good. I think of a book and then I think of a verse. There's a book, I don't remember the title, but it talks about like making your bed first thing.
Yeah.
You know, and how if you just do the next thing to the point, even if it's making your bed, it sets you up. Here's the verse. It's Romans 10, 11. It says, Romans 12, 11. Do not be slothful in zeal. So don't be lazy. Don't be lazy. And then it says, be fervent in spirit. So be passionate. And then next is a command, serve the Lord. So the point is sometimes just doing, just getting up and going will help the motor kick into gear and do what you need to do.
Yeah. I have people in my life who suffer from depression and I tell them, you need to get up and do something nice for your neighbor. Go take the trash can out.
Yeah, it's good.
I promise you, when you're doing that, you cannot wallow in, you know, just that self, whatever it is, pity or whatever it is.
This is a good tie-in to compassion fatigue, which is what Jesus, is that where you were going, Taylor? Well, then I'll let you take it. No, you go.
Matthew 9 here towards the end of this. I've heard this passage multiple times talk about the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few, so pray for the workers. But the verse right before that is just giving us the heart of how Jesus was seeing people. He says, Matthew says in 9:36, says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. So Jose, a lot of people, it's like, okay, I'm going to just focus on the next thing right in front of me. But then the question becomes, how do we do that? And so just the significance of doing it with compassion, seeing people the way that Jesus sees people. So yeah, Jose, the question about compassion fatigue, I did think of you, Ken, because I'm like, if there's anyone that has a legitimate out to be like, yeah, I cared for people for a few years of my day, and yet you're one of the most compassionate people that I know. And just, I'd love to hear just thoughts on kind of how you have continued to maintain and maybe refill that compassion cup over time when there's so many things that are depleting it.
Well, I have so many people pouring into me. I mean, you just don't even know. I can't walk in the grocery store without someone speaking to me, or, you know, and it just makes it, I don't know. Sometimes I do get tired, you know, like I just got off of a board over in San Marcos and it felt really good to shed that, you know, but You know, I mean, God's just blessed me so much in my life that it's easy to kind of walk through to the next thing.
So I want to dissect that, because would you classify yourself as an extrovert?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're
100%.
You're filled up. You're filled up when you're around people.
Yes.
And so knowing what fills you up, because for some people wear them out. And so the way that you refuel is by spending time alone. And so if your job requires you, or your assignment, or wherever God has you, requires you to be around a lot of people, then a good way to refuel is to make sure that you're setting time to be alone. Jesus did this. We all need to do this, not just the introverts, but we all need to be alone with Jesus. Mm-hmm. We need time for introspection. We need time for prayer. We need time for Bible reading and allowing that to seep into the things that we're doing. But knowing yourself is huge, because we're all wired differently. I'm also an extrovert, so I do enjoy being with friends, and especially a day like yesterday, gorgeous outside, being outside, kicking a ball. It's got to be a ball. We have to kick it. That's what refuels me.
Yeah.
But I have friends now that I'm playing soccer with once a week, and that does something to my soul. But that's, you know, soccer doesn't refuel everybody's tank. So you got to find...
I just found pickleball.
Hey, there you go.
Ooh. Oh, I went last Friday for the first time. I really liked
it. You really liked it. So you got to find those things and not be ashamed of those things. Not be concerned about, oh, well, you got to make sure to take the time to refuel. Otherwise, compassion fatigue is a real, real, real issue.
Yes. Well, I walk a lot. People see me walking around town.
I've seen that.
I love to walk and have my headphones in, and I'm typically listening to a sermon or, you know, something that just helps me grow. And I've noticed as I get older, I do enjoy that time alone. I used to be the first one to every party and the last one to leave, and that's slowly changing in my life. And it's I do enjoy being around people, but I also enjoy just hanging out, you know, by myself.
I really resonated with something you said on Sunday, Jose, just about being busy and how, you know, sometimes it wouldn't seem obvious that busyness can take away from compassion. And yet having the margin, you were talking about just having the margin to care, to be able to stop and see people. I'd love to just hear y'all's thoughts on that, as far as just how you've seen that play out, as far as do you make tangible decisions to say no to certain things so that you can be present and be compassionate? Because I feel like just for even both of y'all, like you have plenty of opportunities to do a lot of things in the community, a lot of things in this world. And so how do you just kind of navigate even just decisions you make to make sure you do have time to still care and show compassion towards people?
Well, I'm not real good at no. That's not a big word in my vocabulary. So, but I'm learning, you know, I just turned down some
big things.
You said
no to me. So you're practicing.
Yeah, I'm really practicing. I just, you know, I really tried to pray through that and see where, if God needed me in that position or not.
Yeah.
And it just never came. And I just kept looking for that answer. And so I felt like maybe it was time to do something a little different.
And that's the key thing, is if we're prayerfully considering opportunities, then God's going to lead us to a yes or to a no. I think there's two types of people. One type is, you know, already in leadership, you got a lot going on, you're moving very fast. And I do think of the parable of the Good Samaritan. I mean, they were on either foot or maybe a donkey. And so they just weren't moving very fast. Mm-hmm. And when you don't move fast, you can see a lot. And when you move fast, then things get blurry and you can't stop on a dime. You need more space in order to stop. So the faster we move sometimes, the harder it is to gain control and not lose compassion. So I think for those that are moving very, very fast, then that's where that word no needs to go. Mm-hmm. But then we talked about, for some people, they may not be moving fast at all. And you may need to say yes to some things. And let me give you a couple of things. I mean, we as a church, we have a lot of needs. The harvest is plentiful. Workers are few. All of our service teams need workers.
Yes.
There's so many areas that you can step up and work and try one, see how it works. If it doesn't work, try another one. The point being is we can start saying yes to little things, and then that will bring up, you know, more of what God may have for us in any season. So
What about the significance of going where you are? Because I think that's another thing that people could think, well, does that mean I'm got to go to Africa? Which it might be yes for some people, but it also, you brought up on Sunday, there are needs right across from us that sometimes can be even harder to walk across the street to someone that we have a disagreement with or something like that. So I'd love to hear just y'all's thoughts on how you've seen God show up just where you're at and what that looks like just as you live on mission and on the assignment that God's given you.
Sometimes that is the hardest thing, is like being, you know, talking to your neighbor, or like even in our community group, we've had a little disagreement on this, you know, because we're trying to decide of, you know, are we putting people in the holy headlock? Are we making them get this thing, you know, or do we allow God to walk us through that? How do we witness just in the community?
Yeah.
And that can be very difficult to maneuver through, is like, cause you don't want to look like this weirdo and you don't want to make people not want to be around you. You want to be attractive, but how, you know, but you
where's
also
the line?
Need,
where's the line?
Yeah, where's that yeah. line and how does that yeah. work? I mean, and you know, we looked at Jesus last week. He just invited Matthew to come and be a disciple. And Jesus said, and then Matthew turned right around and said, that's great. Come to my house.
Come to my house.
And then, yeah. you know, the Pharisees were like, whoa, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. But I mean, Jesus had to go in there with a purpose. He didn't just go to the sinner's house just to hang out with the sinners. I mean, he had a purpose, but it doesn't say that he put anybody in a headlock or that he made people, you know, feel shameful for drinking or being a sinner or whatever that is. But he walked in and he was just Jesus.
Yeah.
And those things are attractive to people. And when they need that, you want to be the person that's been attractive. And so they can come to you and talk to you like, you know, I'm a recovering alcoholic and I want to be that person who I'm not shaming you for drinking, because, you know, goodness knows there's a lot of people who can drink and it's not a big deal. But if you have a problem, I want you to know that I'm a person you can come and talk to about that and, you know, and see how that works. What is it? How did it change in my life? And, you know, if there's something I can do to help you out, I want to be attractive and not going, you know, I can't believe you were at that party drinking. That was the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be attractive for that. And I think Jesus was that way. So
I hadn't heard this before, but on Sunday you said, Jose, we want to be witnesses, not lawyers. And I feel like there is such a tendency to be the lawyer that feels like we need to either, you know, force the argument or defend God against, you know, the things of the world or things, you know, that people are doing. And so I just love that idea of we're just witnessing to what God's done in our life mm-hmm. and the people around us and just getting a chance to invite people into that. And there may be a season where they don't do that.
There's an EMS call right there, as a matter of fact.
Do you got to get it?
Nope.
Okay. We want you to get it if you need to get it, but I think you have delegated shift.
I have delegated that to my shift supervisors.
There it is. There it is. They're handling it. We're getting a lesson here. I quoted Rick Warren. He's the one that said that, and I do think this wraps our conversation up well, because when I have been a lawyer, a litigator, and I've done that in my family, specifically with my parents and my siblings, I've done that with people that I'm leading, that I just want them to get it. And I want them to understand. And I want to be very firm about what that line is. And what happens often, not all the time, because sometimes God does want us to come hard and have hard mm-hmm. conversations with people that are very explicit. So I'm not, this is not a blanket statement, but overall, generally, the amount of energy that I put out is extreme, and the amount of response that I get from that person is very little, if any at all. Oftentimes, it goes against the flow that I'm trying to pull them into, mm-hmm. and my compassion level goes so down. I mean, I get bitter, I get, you know, how dare they, and they're wrong, and they're just, you know, dishonoring the Lord, and this is unrighteous, and I get angry. And so that is the opposite of, to your point, Ken, the way that Jesus walked.
Yeah.
He walked with such incredible love for people that it moved him to tears. It moved him so much that when he saw the crowds and saw the needs, he said, I'm going to employ heaven's army on them. I'm going to send out all these imperfect people for my perfect purposes. And that's how we need to go. We need to go with that love. And so if we don't have that love, let's maybe take a step back and refuel with Jesus playing pickleball. Or playing soccer, or Taylor, give us something. Give us something. Running.
Yeah.
Reading. Writing.
Hanging out with people.
Hanging out with people.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I do that a lot better in the community than I do at home with my children. Mm. I'm much better about doing that. But at home, it's like, I don't know why you don't see it the way I see it. And it's like, you know, and I'm sarcastic and, you know, and now my daughter just like, whatever, Dad, you're just being sarcastic. I'm like, no, I want you to get this point. And yeah. So it's much more difficult with home with my mm-hmm. children than it is in the community. I'm very, I have a lot more compassion in the community.
So. Well, you have a lot of compassion in our conversations with your family too. I want to say that for the record. And it truly is hardest with the people that are closest to us because they're also aware of our sin.
Yeah.
And so we're not on a pedestal. And so my goal is to be a hero at home.
Yeah.
And that is going to happen by the way that I speak to my kids, the way that I speak to my wife, the way that my kids hear the way that I treat and love and lead my wife. And so, yeah, if we're low on compassion at home, then it's probably not too much later that compassion in other areas are going to decrease as well.
This has been an amazing conversation. We could keep going, but Ken, thank you so much for your time, your wisdom, your insight. Really enjoyed this conversation.
Well, thank you guys very much. And thank you, Laurel. You did a good job working hard here.
Shout out to Laurel.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to the Conversations Podcast. Be a part of the conversation by sending questions about the Sunday message directly from ccc.guide or by emailing conversations@cypresscreekchurch.com. See you back for the next conversation.